Welcome back, baseball friends, to episode 74 of the Nats GM Show, the only podcast available via the Nats GM Radio Network. I'm your host, Ryan Sullivan, editor-in-chief of NatsGM.com and the Baron of All Baseball Podcasts. The Nats GM Show is proudly sponsored by No Halftime and the No Halftime app. What is the No Halftime and No Halftime app, you ask? Well, let me fill you in a little bit. You're staring at your weekly fantasy opponent and thinking to yourself, I would love to challenge just one of his players, not his entire team, but your fantasy sports service doesn't allow you to. Now you can on the all-new No Halftime app. The No Halftime app allows you to create individual challenges using players or teams. For example, you can pit Bryce Harper versus Mike Trout, Miguel Cabrera versus Manny Machado, or Chris Davis versus Matt Kemp. Creating a challenge takes seconds, and accepting challenges is even easier. No Halftime challenges can be private or public and created for the MLB, NFL, NBA, NHL, PGA, and other sports. Join today and get started. Real money and fantasy supremacy awaits you. And now you can also try No Halftime for free with $0 challenges. Visit NoHalftime.com for more information and to download the No Halftime app for your iPhone or Android device. Receive a bonus by entering in the promo code NATSGM at signup. Receive a free t-shirt when you make a deposit. No Halftime, where the fantasy sports season never takes a break. And we are live at Sabre Seminar one more time with, I'm very excited to be interviewing. I've got Kate Morrison with me from Baseball Prospectus and several other places that she's been writing. I've been a big fan of your work for a long time, so I'm really excited to have a couple minutes to chat with you.
Well, I'm glad to be here.
First place I want to start with you is you did I think maybe the best piece of work at Baseball Prospectus this year with Russell Carlton, the four-part piece talking about just how to get into baseball and working in baseball and that topic. I know, besides how the Nationals are doing, probably the number one question I get all the time is, how do I get into baseball? And first of all, I find it funny that they ask me, considering I'm not in it. But I want to start with just where the concept came from and then kind of give you a space to just what you found.
Well, I mean, it's something that I've talked about before and Russell's talked about before. And it was just kind of right time, right place. We were having some discussions about changes in data accessibility and changes in, you know, just kind of the general culture around baseball. And and then it was just one of those things where it just kind of, you know, we finally just decided to put it together. And it was only going to be, we originally only thought it was going to be like a one-part thing, and then it was going to be a three-part thing, and then it turned into a four-part thing. And we thought it was going to take 2 weeks, and it ended up taking a month. But it was just one of those things where we were, you know, in the right place to kind of take a look at that as, you know, from our particular more data-minded, you know, data-centered mindset.
Well, and the first thing that kind of jumped off the page to me was that, first of all, that so many of the people that are hired in baseball start with the internship process. And I think that that's almost a flawed process in and of itself. Both trying to get diversity and just the people that can take those kind of internships. Talk a little bit about that part of the piece.
Well, it was, you know, it's something that's not just baseball. It's the entire, it is baseball. We focused on baseball because that is the area in which we, you know, we both work, we both move, we have this kind of experience with it. But it is something you see in the entire business world. And baseball is the business world. It's no different than anywhere else. So it's just this, it's the fact that the cost of living has gone up, wages haven't. Internships used to be something you did in college, and then they've gotten pushed, oh, well, no, you need to have your college degree before you get an internship, and it's become the thing you do. It is a way for a company to try out a potential employee while reducing risk on the company, which it makes sense as to why it's become a thing, because companies are all about reducing risk for themselves, but it's come to a point where it's actively restricting the groups of people who can enter into certain areas of business, because know, for some of these internships where you're not making enough money, but you're also working too much to go take another job. And so it's one of those things where you have to, you know, when you're looking at something practically, sometimes you have to make the really hard decision against something that maybe you've always dreamed of doing, because you know that you're not going to be able to afford it.
Right, and that's a problem. Another great part of your piece came with the, and I might have the number wrong, but I think you said 16% of these internships are now going to Ivy League and Ivy League these schools, which is only, what, 8 schools in the Northeast, 10 schools in the Northeast? I mean, that's a very small grouping. And one, I wanted to...
I believe it was maybe 14, but I also, you know, I don't have it in front of me. Well, I mean, that's part of it is because it's a networking thing. I mean, why do people come to something like Sabre Seminar? Why do people go to Sabre Analytics? Why do people, you know, go to events and stuff? It's who you know. And because since the Sabre Metric Revolution, a lot of the people that have been brought in to baseball departments are from these Ivy League schools, are from these big name campuses, then you end up with, okay, well, I know this professor, and I'll go back to this professor and say, hey, who you got that's a good, you know. And so it's not anything in C. It's not, you know, deliberately like, oh, I'm only going to, it's just a, well, I trust this person's opinion, and I'm sure they'll give me a student or two that will do good work, or that, you know. Or I'll go back here and do a speaking engagement, and then that's how I'll find some people to come in and bring into the department.
But I think, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but what I got from the piece was, it seems like we've now gotten into a little bit of a box in terms of the creativity of thought, because we have typically middle to upper class, typically white, and from the Ivy League, you kind of get into this vacuum of thought. Is that kind of where you were going with it, or?
Well, yes, there have been studies that have shown that an increased level of diversity, both of race and gender, in business, so not specifically baseball, but in a business place, in a workplace, does tend to have an increased level of creativity, an increased level of diversity of thought. And so if you're bringing in more ideas, that can only apply to baseball in a positive way as well. So it's one of those things where, you know, baseball's all, especially now after the sabermetric revolution, baseball's all about trying to find that competitive advantage. And so if you're only pulling from the same sources, are you really going to have the same kind of competitive advantage? I mean, because teams, what did teams do when they discovered that there was competitive advantage in types of players that had been previously pushed aside? They went out and signed those players. And so it's something that we would obviously need to do more research on in order to say, you know, this is a definite competitive advantage. But it's something that would absolutely not shock me if it was discovered that was true.
So I guess the final question you always have to ask is, how do we improve? If you were put in charge of something, or how could we make this situation, and I'm using the scare quotes, better?
I think that more, you know, and this applies to internships everywhere, whether you're at a bank, or if you're at, you know, working for the Yankees, or if you're working for, I don't know, the New York Rangers or something like that. If you're working for Vogue, interns need to be paid better, because an internship is a job. You're going to be treated like it's a job, and you're going to be expected to produce output like it's a job. And it's really difficult for people to do their job if they're also having to try to scramble to find rent to pay. The second thing is to recruit out of unexpected places, to be willing to look in new locales. And I, you know, obviously I have no idea what teams are doing behind the doors. There could be teams out there that are already taking these steps independent of what Russell and I wrote, because I have no illusions about, you know, Russell and I what
right,
our
sure.
But
I think if you increase the salaries, you get a higher quality of candidate as well, and you don't limit yourself in that regard either.
I think that's something that's very possible, because there are lots of very smart people out there who just can't afford to take that kind of thing. You know, if you graduate from college and you're, you know, you're like, oh, I would love to do baseball, but I have this offer on the table for a $50,000 a year job at a bank,
it's difficult.
It's difficult economically to, especially if you're someone who's coming out of college with a lot of debt, or if you're coming out of college
like we all did.
You don't have and you don't have a family situation where you can fall back on them, or you feel comfortable falling back on them. Then it's kind of a no-brainer.
Very good point. I could talk to you about this for hours, but I do want to get one more question in and one more subject. Texas Rangers. When I think of the Rangers, I think of you. I mean, you are, when I think of biggest fans and experts, that's who I think of. So, thoughts on the trade deadline? Go ahead, start there.
I thought it was a good one. I thought that they did a good job of, well, you know, because I look at this differently. I look at it as the trades, declaring winners and losers is really dumb. The Rangers traded from a place of strength. In the Beltran deal, they sent some the deal that they got two pitchers for one middle infielder. You know, people were freaking out about that, but it's a middle infielder. For the Rangers, even a really good middle infielder at like low A or something is going to be quote unquote worth less to them because they have so many of them. And because they have a proven track record of being able to develop them. So it's trading from a position of strength. Now in the trade for Lucroy, that does you know, the Rangers are maybe not even top 15 system anymore. They're not a top 15 system anymore. But there is no award for best farm system. You don't get a trophy. You don't get a parade.
Right.
But you do get a trophy and parade for winning the World Series. And sometimes that means trading your top two prospects.
Yeah.
Trading for Lucroy, trading for Jeffress, but Jeffress bolsters a bullpen that needed bolstering. Lucroy has already been an incredible advantage for them. And then, you know, sending, I don't even remember what did they send for Beltran?
Dylan Tate was the headline, anyways.
Who's had issues, and he's struggling. And it's one of those things where maybe a change of scenery will actually help him. So there are multiple considerations. It's not just add up the wars and one is good and one is bad. It's... There are multiple things to consider here. I think that they've put themselves in a very good position. I think that adding Lucroy, who is a proven top line catcher, you know, and who has not, you know, has continued to hit and continued to perform. I think that adding Beltran, who is continuing to perform, those are all steps that will really strengthen the major league roster in advance of trying to take advantage of what they have now. They have Beltran. They have, you know, Profar. They have Andrews. They have a bunch of pieces that can create a really solid team.
Okay, final question.
Yeah.
Joey Gallo. Is he part of this team a year from now? Is he traded? And what do you just think about him long term?
I mean, I still believe in Joey Gallo. I think that he's the thing about Gallo is you have to understand what kind of a player he is. He's not ever going to hit 280. That's just not what he is. But he doesn't have to hit 280 to be successful. He just has to hit home runs. And so the fact that I don't know if he's a part of this team. I don't know if he's part of the Rangers in a year. But I do think that he'll be a major leaguer.
I mean, Adam Dunn was a heck of a ball player hitting 240.
Yeah, that's the thing, is that, you know, when people say, oh, well, who's next Adam Dunn, that's not an insult.
No, that was a great ball player that made about $100 million in his career, yeah.
Yep.
So, well, Kate, I could ask you questions all day long. We got to cut it here for time. Please, spot for your plugs, where people can find your work, where they can find you online, and everything in between.
You can find me on Twitter at UnlikelyFanatic, and you can find me at Baseball Prospectus. You can find me occasionally locally at WFAA. You can find me at Today's Knuckleball twice a week, usually, and other places on the web.
Well, Kate is a must-follow, Unlikely Fanatic, one of my favorites on Twitter. Thank you so very much for clearing some time for me, and I really appreciate seeing you.
Thank you.
Thank you.